Television, opiate of the masses, the plug-in drug. This is the subject of this week's Radio Nile. And to get you into the mood, here's Black Flag. TV party tonight! TV party tonight! TV party tonight! TV party tonight!
We're gonna have a TV party tonight! We're gonna have a TV party, all right!
Tonight! We've got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Everybody's gonna hang out here tonight!
All right!
We'll pass out on the couch, all right!
Tonight! We've got nothing better to do than watch TV. Don't talk about anything else. We don't wanna know. We're dedicated to our favorite shows.
That's incredible. Hillstreet Blues, Dallas, Friday. We stick glued to the TV set all night
and every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright! We've got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
TV news shows, what it's like out there!
It's a scare!
You can go out if you want.
We wouldn't dare! We've got nothing better to do. Then watch TV and have a couple of brews. Don't talk about anything else. We don't wanna know. We're dedicated to our favorite shows.
Saturday Night Live,
Monday Night Football, Jefferson, Vegas.
I wouldn't be without my TV for a day.
Or even a minute!
Don't even bother to use my brain anymore!
There's nothing left in it! We've got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Hey, wait a minute! My TV doesn't work!
It's broken!
What are we gonna do tonight? This isn't fair!
We're hurting! We've got nothing left to do. Let's go TV and just a couple of brews. What are we gonna talk about? I don't know. We're gonna miss our favorite shows.
No, that's incredible.
No, Monday Night Football.
No,
Jefferson.
No,
Friday.
No.
Don't look at the computer screen while you're listening to me. Apparently, while you're looking into such a light, your brain enters a hypnotic non-learning state. This is a lot more pronounced if it's on the television rather than looking at a computer, but it still has an influence. Regardless of what is being watched, whether it's a mindless cartoon or a nature program or the news, television viewing has an effect on the brain, and not enough research has been done focusing on this neurological effect. It's the way that the light's actually radiant light rather than natural daylight. Natural daylight is reflected off objects, whereas radiant light is coming directly from the source that you're looking at. When you look at radiant light, it's like the primitive fire gazing. That was very important for religions in the past, fire gazing, because it puts you in a relaxed state. And the same with candles. Candles are very important in religions as well. Now, it seems with televisions that it's the actual flickering on the screen that has the most potent effect on slowing down your brain waves. It changes them from beta waves to alpha waves. Beta waves are what the brain produces when you're reading and with active learning. Alpha waves are produced in a dreaming, meditative state where there's a lack of mental activity. When people watch television, it's been found that within 30 seconds of beginning to view the television, your brain changes from producing beta waves to alpha waves. And in fact, it's the neurological equivalent of staring at a blank wall. While we're producing these alpha waves, we're in a suggestive state, which is useful for advertisers and for propaganda. We just take in the information subconsciously. In fact, this sort of light effect is also used by hypnotists. So it's a well-known form of trying to change the mental state so as to make it more suggestible. It really does sound as if this would be bad for children whose brains are developing. And you can see from this that whether the program is educational or not, the effect that it has by producing these alpha waves can be harmful in that it puts the brain in this sleepy state. And apparently people find it very hard to remember information received by the TV in that when they're in that state. A study gave three groups of people a text which was either on paper, presented in a documentary film, or on reading it on the text on a TV screen. And they found that in the first case, where people were reading it off the paper, they could remember 85% of the information. When the same information was presented in a documentary film, they remembered 25 to 30% of the information, and when they were reading it as a text on a television screen, they merely remembered only 3 to 5% of the information. Herbert Krugman discovered that during TV watching, the right side of the brain is stimulated, and that's to do with nonverbal communication. So you've got a situation where the right side of the brain is being overstimulated and actually the left side is being completely understimulated. And the left side's to do with language, thinking, analysis. So you can imagine that that would have a really negative effect on any children in particular who are trying to develop skills such as reading and thinking. The reason I referred to the television also as a plug-in drug is that it does in fact have an addictive aspect to it as well. Television triggers endorphins, which are the body's natural opiates, causing an addictive response. Since children who watch a lot of TV tend to get bored or anxious without fast-paced stimulation and lack the ability to form images in their own minds because they lack imagination, this leads to attention and listening problems. Such children don't enjoy reading. Britain has the fewest books in the whole of Europe, while at the same time being the country where most television is watched. In this respect, it's no different from the situation in the United States.
Don't worry, John!
Television is like virtual reality. It takes the place of reality. People feel as though they're living their lives through their television screens. When people meet each other in their daily lives, their conversation often turns to what they last saw on television. Did you see this or did you see that? The TV presents an alternative reality world to you. If you're watching the television in Britain, for example, you imagine that the people you see on the screen are somehow representative of the people of the nation. It leads you to form an opinion as if the British people actually look like that and behave like they do on the television also. In fact, this is very misleading and manipulative. You're being given a false impression of what your peer group's like, what sort of people they are and what sort of way that they behave. Social behaviour can be moulded by giving people the impression that what they see on their TV screens is somehow representative of normal behaviour. Soap operas are very typically used for social engineering purposes. Think, for example, if the government wants to promote more tolerance towards homosexuality. In this situation, typically there'll be a homosexual character in the soap opera with whom you're supposed to empathise. It's hoped that you'll find this character to be very appealing and you'll wonder why anyone could possibly object to such people in society. And they'll generally take it further by introducing something like a long lingering gay kiss in the middle of the daytime television when it's supposed to be family viewing. Effectively, this is like defining new rules on how people should be behaving and what they should be tolerating in the outside world. People watch this and get the impression that if they don't behave with tolerance towards homosexuality, then there's something really wrong about them themselves. Altering views on racism is another aspect. The soap opera will often have a black couple or a black family, and they're presented the way the establishment actually thinks that multicultural society should behave. Trying to break prejudices and get people to behave in a politically correct way. Quite often they'll introduce another character that's supposed to be like the villain in the piece. Someone who doesn't like black people, for example, and they're supposed to be someone who you find really obnoxious and you want all manner of bad things to happen to them. And this is where all the stereotypes really come into play. There's no doubt that this social engineering is very effective. Millions of people seem to prefer to watch soap operas such as Neighbours without actually wanting to interact with their own neighbours. Next door to someone watching this soap opera, there might be a little old woman and they don't even know the circumstances of their neighbour, and they're just not interested in finding out what she needs. They just want to watch this completely fictitious drama on their television screens instead. This sort of situation is a lot more common in cities than it would be in more rural areas. The television viewer becomes entirely absorbed by the lives of the characters that they're watching on their television screen. They become so convinced that this is reality even that many soap opera stars claim to have been accosted by fans of the show who actually think that they are the real character that they play on the screen. These actors even say that it can get quite scary when they get accused of behaving in a certain way on the soap opera and told off by some stranger in the shop about it. They have to explain that they're actually an actor and they're not responsible for whatever scandalous activities their on stage or on-screen character might have got up to. Documentaries, art and the news are all completely biased. They bombard us with the liberal values of multiculturalism, democracy, commercialism or tolerance. The shows and the adverts encourage consumption. And we're supposed to take the view that our society, our democracy, is the only way that people should live, and that all other countries should come around to our system and our way of doing things. People are led generally to believe that human values depend upon what possessions you have. Adverts give the impression that if you haven't bought this watch or this car, you're just not worth as much as someone who has. No doubt this increases the crime rate. This materialistic attitude is really encouraged and exacerbated by the dramas, which usually include characters that are obsessed by dresses or jewellery or other various status symbols, which just increases the impression that you've got to own these things and exacerbates the greed in society. Rather than going out into the real world and achieving something, people seem to have this obsession now with just being famous. What this comes down to is just appearing on television, even if it's just for the so-called 15 minutes of fame. They dream of being broadcast to millions as if this really was the outside world. There's so little news on news broadcasts, it's just like they're all the same news stories. No matter what channel it is, it's clear that they've all been coordinated in some way, and also that a lot of what's really going on in the world is just completely left out. There's an impression that everything's under control and you don't need to worry. And there's this format where they tend to end the news with a little humorous story as well, just to make sure that people don't leave feeling too depressed by anything that they might have seen. And of course they then have the ubiquitous sports news, which just isn't really news at all. When people have worked all day and they come home tired, it's common for them to just flop in front of the TV screen. They don't even care what's on, they just pretty much watch anything. Televisions generally occupy a very central and predominant position in the rooms of people's homes, and it's very common for people to just watch the television to the extent that they just don't communicate with the rest of their family. They ignore their kids, they ignore their wife or their husband, and it's all too common to just leave children in front of the TV for hours at a time, just letting the television basically bring the child up as if it was their nanny. There can be no doubt that this would make the child absorb all the politically correct messages and the influences from all the commercials that they see. But also, if the child has a television in their room, which is often the case, the child might just be left to watch whatever they want late at night. And who can doubt that that has a really bad effect on society, as it takes away childhood innocence?
Hier ist das erste deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
Good evening. Good evening.
Buenas noches, señoras y señores.
Mesdames et messieurs, bonjour.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren, und herzlich willkommen. Willkommen.
Real or a dream? The whole world at once. Frankfurt nun die Wettervorhersage für morgen. Für morgen.
The satellite picture shows a lot of clouds around over Europe.
Das Wetter. Das Wetter. Das Wetter.
Information.
Information.
Information wants to be free.
Information.
Transformation.
Information.
Information.
Right, I'm going to read a report from The New Scientist from July 2005. Right, too much time in front of the TV reduces children's learning abilities, academic achievement, and even the likelihood of their graduating from university, suggest three new studies. But it really may be the quality, not the quantity, of the programmes that really matters. Decades of studies have linked childhood hours in front of the TV with aggressive behaviour, early sexual activity, smoking, obesity and poor school performance. The research has led the American Academy of Paediatrics to suggest children watch no more than 2 hours of TV per day and that children under 2 years old watch none at all. But results on cognitive abilities and TV watching have been mixed. Some researchers have found that high-quality educational TV programmes are a boon for learning. Others have shown that the negative effects of hours in front of the TV disappear when confounding factors such as IQ or socioeconomic status are included. So, Robert Hancock's at the University of Otago in New Zealand and colleagues studied nearly 1,000 children born in Dunedin, New Zealand, in 1972 and 1973. The researchers gathered data from both parents and children on how many hours a day were each spent watching TV at age 5, 7, 9, 11, 13 and 15. The team then re-evaluated the participants at the age of 26. Kids who watched the least TV, especially between the ages of 5 and 11, had the highest probability of graduating from university by the age of 26, regardless of IQ or socioeconomic status, while those who watched the most TV, more than 3 hours a day, had the highest chance of dropping out of school without qualifications. Furthermore, the effect seemed to be strongest for those who had a median IQ level, probably because the outcomes for the children at either IQ extreme are less likely to be affected by TV watching. Two other studies, also published in the July issue of Archives of Paediatric and Adolescent Medicine, found similar results. Dina, how do you say that name? Borzekowicki at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and colleagues found that Northern Californian third graders aged about 8 with a TV in their bedroom watched more TV, surprise, surprise, and performed worse on standardised tests than classmates without a bedroom TV. Frederick Zimmerman and Dimitri Chrysakis at the University of Washington in Seattle found that kids who watched the most TV before the age of 3 performed poorest in the reading and mathematics tests at age 6 and 7. But there did seem to be some benefit for TV watching in 3 to 5-year-olds, probably because of the large number of educational programmes targeted at this age category, such as Sesame Street. For the duration of this study, 1990 to 1996, very little educational programming for under threes was available in the US. In an accompanying editorial, Ariel Chernin and Deborah Linebarger at the University of Pennsylvania, US, points out that all three studies do not separate the effects of educational versus entertainment programming. Well, that's a bit useless then. One proposed mechanism of how TV harms educational achievement is that TV takes away time from creative play, reading or doing homework. But the editorial notes, research specifically examining this, suggests it's not the amount of viewing that matters but the content of what's viewed. They suggest that parents should encourage kids to watch quality educational programming. But Barry Milne, a co-author on the New Zealand study, suggests that this is easier said than done. Content could well be a confounding factor. But what we did find is that the type of TV kids actually do watch is not good for them. To read you a couple of pages from a really excellent book called Life at the Bottom by Theodore Dalrymple. The English, it was observed by an aristocratic Frenchman as long ago as the 18th century, take their pleasures sadly. Nowadays they also take them passively, like a drug addict who seeks happiness and oblivion simultaneously by the simplest means possible. I do not mean that the English make no effort to seek out entertainment. On the contrary, like the addict's search for his drug, this pursuit is often the only serious business of their lives. But the entertainment, once found, should require, for it to be truly entertaining, as little active mental contribution from the entertained as possible. Premium Inter Pares is, of course, the television. The average English adult now watches 27 hours of it per week. It is said twice as much as two decades ago. In this, the English are no different from many other nations. Indeed, the Americans while away the same proportion of their lives in front of the small screen as the island race. In any case, the figure could be misleading. Experience from doing medical house calls convinces me that a television switched on is not necessarily a television watched. It flickers in the background, competing for fragments of divided attention with a radio and perhaps a domestic quarrel or two. And even when it is watched, there's no guarantee that anything gets much further than the optic nerves. I have many times asked patients who I visited at home, while they were sitting in front of the television, to describe what they were watching, only to be met with the blank silence of inability or incomprehension. One might as well have asked a habitué of an opium den for the contents of his consciousness as ask modern viewers of television for theirs. When I was young and inexperienced, I used to ask the patient or his relatives to turn the television off, but in England that means, at best, only a slight reduction in its volume. It's disconcerting to conduct a medical examination with a moving picture casting a changing light over the room, and the patient trying to peer over one's shoulder or round one's side to catch a glimpse of it, while confusing one's questions with the dialogue of a soap opera. Once I went to a paralysed old lady's house and found the television on, I asked the daughter who was present to turn it off. "I don't know how," she said, and she didn't. Nowadays, I march into a house and turn the television off myself. It's the only way to get the patient's full attention. Even if he or she is seriously ill and likely to die without medical treatment. In the hospital, it's now regarded as being cruel to deprive the patients of their daily screen, so much so that watching it has become virtually compulsory for them, or at least inescapable for those not in a position to remove themselves. Gone are the days when the hospital was a place of quiet, insofar as possible, and repose. No one dies nowadays without the benefit of a chat show. I have many times tried the following simple experiment. In a ward full of incapacitated patients, I have turned off the television or televisions and then left the ward for 5 minutes. Unfailingly, the television or televisions are switched on again by the time I return. But who has turned them on again? I have never been able to discover. The patients could not have done so, and the nurses deny it. It's a mystery as complete as that of the Turin Shroud. But the nurses always say, the patients want it on and will continue to say it, even though a straw poll usually reveals precisely the opposite. It seems to me prima facie unlikely that an 80-year-old lady with right-sided hemiplegia after a stroke and with difficulty swallowing her own saliva really wants to watch Mr. Motivator, a keep-fit fanatic in a body-hugging lycra suit of fluorescent colours, demonstrating to the insistent beat of disco music the exercises by means of which the viewer may rid herself of cellulite on her thighs. There is someone in the ward, however, a postmodernist perhaps, who believes otherwise, who believes that a moment unentertained is a moment wasted, and that a mind unfulfilled by someone else's drivel is a vacuum of the kind nature abhors.
Splinters I recall. Each living thing breathes life. Only sentiment remains. Two liquid born from patterns formed. Sand descends with blind intent. Where the river takes me will in time be revealed. We'll be right back. watching the sun come up in vain. The only reason I can find why I remained. I need to leave the point I came to again and again. It didn't matter how hard I tried. It took so long to claim that I knew how or what it meant to let go of this, to ever say goodbye. Call it destiny, call it fate. Chose my direction, running forward. Each life to learn new. Whatever, whatever